Slingard Reel 8. Now, I want to ask you about you've talked about the Atlantic convoy you went on, but there was also a period when you were operating in the Bay of Biscay, around about December 43, where you were sort of acting as support to three separate convoys and came under attack from sort of everything that could attack you. What do you remember of that? It's sort of glider bomb attacks, all sorts of things, acoustic torpedoes. What do you remember of that?
Not a great deal about it. I always remember this. I didn't hear this said, but they did say that... that if you could deflect some radio waves to these glider bombs, they would... And Shavas got his electric razor out and was using that on the bridge. But it was just a fairy story, I believe. Whether it did happen, I don't know. But a lot of stories went around like that with these glider bombs. But they were, you know, a lot of swerving about. And the Alton was pretty busy down there, swerving all over the place. You know, hard to port, hard to starboard, with these things flying down. How many of them dropped, I don't know, I can't remember. I know it was pretty hectic at the time, and the usual amount of gunfire that was going up. And I don't honestly think we ever hit anything, I don't honestly.
But you were firing as well.
We were firing, yeah. Mainly the excuse was that the more you fire, you'll keep them high up out of the way. Keep them, you know, up amongst the clouds.
There's talk in Shavas's 4th Escort Group book about a close escape that caused the Bentinck to rise up.
Yes, they said that they did. There's a little story about that. Whether it was true, of course. There was an explosion under the ship. Now, what happened then was they think it was an acoustic torpedo that had been let off or dropped by an aircraft. The person himself, I think he'd come from a U-boat. And it went off astern. It wasn't directly underneath, but it wasn't far. But it lifted the stern end completely out of the water. The back end, of course, the props, you know, almost shook the ship to pieces with the two props going round. And it was a hairy moment because everything stopped then. All the cutouts on the ship fell out. There was no electricity. Everything stopped. The engine stopped. And we were just waving about on the swell. It seemed like ages to us. And of course, the old lower deck that was knocking about there was called up, and everybody was on lookout stations. There was a whole ring of men round the ship looking for tracks of torpedoes or anything that was disturbing the water. And of course, what happened then, it was blown up out of the water, and it was quite a lot of vibration. That did eventually start closing up the electrics and that, and we did start the air. It had a lot of vibrations underneath there. But the EA has come to the conclusion that it was probably a bent shaft or a blade off one of the props, or one of the A-frames had gone. The A-frames had all the shaft in place. But anyway, after it was all over and there was no other reports on all that, no leaks, everybody, all the stoker staff, engineer staff was down below looking for leaks. If it had been a riveted ship, I'm sure some of them plates would have moved, you know. But being all welded, they all bent and buttled a little bit, you know. But there seemed to be no panic after about, it seemed like a long time, but it must have been about 45 minutes or an hour. We got underway and started to move again. But at a certain speed, you still got this vibration from underneath. And they weren't quite sure what it was. But eventually, they did say it was an A-frame that had, you know, come adrift. Wasn't floating around, I suppose. One of the legs on it had got fractured, and I think that's what the conclusion that it was.
But during operations like that in the Bay of Biscay, what about fatigue? How much of an impact did that have on you? What effects did you get very tired with sort of constant action stations, the rest of it?
No. You was closed up quite a good many hours there. And I don't say you were ever frightened or anything like that. The fact was that you got very tired and you got very nervous of things. There was one particular instance where I remember this quite well, that when we were at this particular station, when we'd stopped and everything had shut down, everybody was on lookout, you see, for duty, for torpedo tracks. And there was a track sighted by someone, I don't know who it was, from on the port side. And everybody fell silent. And I didn't realise until then that when I looked round, there was one or two blokes praying. And whatever it was, whether it was a torpedo, whatever it was, that report, it went straight underneath the ship and right out the other side. Now, whether it was a torpedo, nobody knows. You know, it never exploded. Whether it run out of steam and just sank to the bottom, I don't know. But I did look around and I thought, well, somebody looks on God, you know, that there's several there who were praying.
How did you feel? I mean, you'd worried when you were in the, you know, down below, looking at the side. I mean, how did you feel in yourself about all this?
I was frightened to death, really. When I had that bunk near the bulkhead there, and I could listen to the water hitting the sides, especially if the weather was a bit rough or we was getting a bit of a battering, it used to frighten me to death there. And I had all sorts of visions through this plate of steel, what could happen. And I used to be wringing wet with perspiration. And then I asked if I could move amidships out of the way. And I swapped with another chap and I moved amidship. My excuse was to move amidship because you didn't get so much rock in there. You know, you weren't seasick so much. I was never really seasick. But my excuse was that I felt I could sleep better amidships. I didn't tell the lads I was frightened to bloody death looking at this sheet of steel.
Did you try and conceal you a bit nervous then? You'd try naturally not to show it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what about tiredness? How bad did it get? How tired did you get on a long trip?
It was never really tired, donk tired. The only time you was really donk tired when you'd had enough was when you'd been on watch for so long and your eyes started to ache and that was hot, your eyeballs were red hot. And then you used to get really tired. But everybody used to sleep. I mean, say you went down below and you sleep like a log. Whether it was due to the issue of rum at lunchtime, I don't know. But you certainly used to sleep. But, you know, I don't think that I was really scared to death. I was too bloody silly, I suppose, you know. You didn't think of these things. Not like today. We didn't need counselling.
Now, the next big thing is you went on a series of convoys between December 43 and October 44. So that's, you know, almost a year. Backwards and forwards to the Mediterranean, mainly to Naples, I think. Could you explain what exactly you were doing as you saw it?
Going outwards, we didn't seem to be escorting many ships at all. They all seemed very, very small ships in the convoy, small in number, going out there. But coming back, we picked up ships joining the convoy from all over the place, various ports from North Africa, and coming back. And by the time we got back to the Straits of Gibraltar there, the convoy was quite large. Some say there was 60 to 80 ships in the convoy. That, I don't know, I never counted them. But there was never any attacks, air attacks coming back, as I can remember. We had several alarms go off with U-boats probably in the vicinity. But we did, in several cases, there were several Portuguese sailing ships that got in our way. And when this happened, there was hell to play. We were never told to avoid these ships. If they got in our way, it was their bloody hard luck.
The fishing ships?
The fishing fleet, the Portuguese fishing smacks that was out there. They always seemed to be causing trouble. They're always in the shipping lanes. But the orders was, you know, if they're in your way, just keep going. You know, if we hit them, we hit them. There was under the impression that these were reporting to the German authorities or the Italian authorities that, you know, there's several convoys coming through. That's what they thought may be happening. Whether it did, I don't know. But there was certainly seemed to be a lot of these small fishing boats out there, hell of a lot, particularly near the Straits of Gibraltar, where the convoys had to level out almost singly to get through there.
Now, they called it the Millionaire's Run, or something you call it. I mean, it was a cushy number. I mean, was that true?
The tram lines. The Mediterranean tram lines, yeah. We got so used to going out there, come back to the lovely town. Yes, it was the Millionaire's Run. We had very little activity. It was very boring. We'd done lots of sunbathing. We did stop at Algiers once. We pulled in Algiers for fresh fruit. And we loaded with fruit. We was eating oranges, bananas, apples, you know, for weeks on end. Every mess deck was lined with fruit, you know. Tons of it. Bags of fruit from Algiers. I think we called in there probably a couple of times as we was down there. There's another one where we had another vibration under this. This was at, wasn't Algiers. It was more near, it wasn't at Gibraltar, before we got to Gibraltar, on the North African coast there. We had a lot of vibration there, and they reckoned that that was something that stuck on the prop. Some say it was a large fish, you know, a porpoise or small whale or a whale, and we went into dry dock there. And I think we was booked for the dry dock, and they had some divers come down and had a look. And that was an A-frame again that had, you know...
It was causing the propeller to vibrate, the propeller shaft.
The shaft, causing the shaft to vibrate, yeah. And he's probably written in the book somewhere where it was, but it wasn't at Algiers, it was this side of there. And that was only another A-frame vibration, that was. Some people said that it was a whale that had got stuck there, or a large porpoise, or whatever it was. But anyway, they examined it. There was nothing seriously wrong with it. Away we went again.
No, you were mainly going to Naples. What was this scene like at Naples?
Well, it was the first time we'd seen Vesuvius in the distance, and it was quite a lot. We had a regatta there with the usual boats.
Tell us about the regatta, because there's a lot of people talked about the regatta.
That's right.
Well, what do you remember of it? Were you involved in it at all, or did you
watch it? No, I was never involved in the regatta or anything like that. I was never the seaboat's crew. I tried to get out of anything strenuous like that.
How important was the regatta? Because it was a competition between the ships and...
It was competition between the group ships, you know, the 4th Escort Group. We didn't win it, I know that. But anything strenuous like that, I tried to find something else to do. Probably all the guns wanted cleaned in, or ammunition wanted refurbishing. Anything to get out of anything strenuous like that. We did go ashore there. We had some shore leave there, and they dropped the Liberty boat to go ashore. And I always remember this. As we went ashore there, there was part of the harbour had been bombed. And there was a... I suppose bigger than a donkey, it'd be a mule, I suppose. And they were tipping rubbish down, you know, broken masonry and all that down there. And obviously, as we go in ashore in the Liberty boat, about 20 of us, I think, and there was a man there whipping hell out of this bloody animal, trying to pull the cart out of him, the rubber. It was obviously, he backed it in too far and he got stuck there. And some of the lads there, they didn't like this at all, you know. They thought it was damn well bloody cruel, you know. He shouldn't have backed the bloody thing down there in the first place. Anyway, as soon as we got ashore, about 6 of them legged it off to go and assist. So they did assist. They went round there, gave the Italian a good punching, and threw him about 30 feet into the water, and then pulled the animal out with the cart. What happened to the bloke that chucked in? I don't know. I've never seen him come out. But that was a bit vicious with him. They gave him a bloody good punching for it in the hand and threw him in the side there. And then some went off to a bar, and I think some Americans there had confiscated some bar there, and there was pretty well a free wine floating about. Some of the lads ran around there, but personally myself, I was just around looking at things. I didn't drink a lot in those days, and I just went and had a, you know, wine I was not very fussy about. A lot of them was drinking it by the bottle. Personally myself, I always just stick for some of the local beer, whatever it was, Stella beer, and had a couple of glasses of that, but I was more interested in looking at the place. Hell of a lot of damage around Naples and that.
How did you get on with the Italians that you met?
We met one or two out there. All right, you know, that was all anti-German, of course. They all wanted to fight for the British. It was everybody says exactly the same thing. I said the bloody Germans was the same when they captured them. They didn't want to fight the British, you know. But, so the Italians are all right. The ladies seemed to avoid us very well. They seemed to walk the other way, or the Italians were locking them up, I think.
What about the black market? Because I know from Harry Fine there was a black market.
There was a black market.
Were you aware of it, or were you involved in it at all?
No, I sold several lots of cigarettes. I used to roll my own, you know, but as they used to call it, tins of tickler tobacco. That I used to roll my own in there. But the cheap ones, the players, and the Wills Woodbines, they were as big as player cigarettes. They were quite large, and were like you bought in this country. And I was flogging them for, you know, pounds, you know.
Would you get things in kind?
Yeah, I got things in kind as well. And some of the girls were doing things in kind as well. And as I say out there, for a bar of soap or a bar of chocolate, you could name anything. But Puss of Soap went down well there. I don't know why, you know, it was all that good of soap, hard yellow soap. But you can make a fortune selling soap and tobacco.
Was it organised or was it small scale?
Small scale. Yeah, it wasn't organised. No, it was all small scale stuff. And quite a lot of them ended up with a lot of German money on board, as well as Italian stuff. Quite a lot ended up with, whether it was any good to us, heaven only knows. But things like that, they did go on, and some lads went ashore and enjoyed themselves. The younger ones, such as myself, you know, young in mind as well as body, you know, you didn't go around looking for all these loose bits that were floating about, and there were some. I'd do anything for a bar of chocolate or a bar of soap. But that was the only time I ever went ashore there, of all the runs we did. But it was like everything else. There was three watches on the ship, and they only let, you know, one watch go ashore.
Now, one thing I noticed, and you might remember, was the Bentinck nearly fired on a target towing plane, and it says the aircraft recognition was poor. And I just wonder whether you had anything to do with this, because... Was that anything to do with you?
It was nothing to do with me personally there, yeah, but I remember it quite well.
What happened?
I couldn't recognise one bloody aircraft from another there, you know. There was also an incident, I don't think it's mentioned there.
Tell us that one first. What do you remember happening about that?
I remember calling to action stations and all that, and there was this aircraft up there, and I don't know, it wasn't me, it was somebody there said it was a... I don't know if it was an Italian or a German aircraft, before you know it, that sounded action stations, and they started flashing a Morse code signal to it, you know, and nothing happened, and they weren't going to reply. And I remember the skipper saying, you know, put a shot across its bows, you know, things like that, and that happened. And then, for heaven knows, for unknown reason, all the bloody guns opened up, you know, pom-poms and everything.
Well, so you actually fired at it?
It was hilarious for a few minutes, yeah.
And what type of plane was it? Was it British or French or Italian or what was it?
They seemed to think it was... some said it was an American one, was it? I don't know. But they seemed to think it was an Italian one, Italian aircraft. But there's also another instance, which they never mentioned, across the Bay of Biscay, there was a blimp that used to patrol there. And the blimp, you know, the balloons with a little basket on the bottom... It was one of them, and I remember we was going to Algiers at the time, we was going through there, and one of these blimps was floating across there, and this was an American, got USA along the side of it, and the skipper had said, you know, give the recognition signal on the Morse, and that, and nothing happened there. And they flashed it again, and still got a reply. Well, they knew what the password was, or whatever it was, the recognition word, I don't know. But they was told an A gun, you know, fire one shot, and then they fired one shot, and all of a sudden the balloon vanished out of the way, you know. Whether that was mechanically propelled with an engine, never know, but it seemed to move very quickly after that one shot. But I'm sure that on the bridge there, they had a good laugh, and I suppose they thought, well, if you don't ask, we'll shoot the bugger down. But that was, it got USA stamped along the side of it.
Anything else that happened on those trips? I mean, they were quiet trips overall, but...
They were very quiet trips, very quiet trips. But what they don't mention in any of the books there, that coming back there, the boatswain on board, he was disliked altogether. But we left Algiers. He used to drink a lot, the boatswain. He was always under the weather. And he was bloody awful when he was had a few drinks.
In what way?
Nasty-tempered. Nobody was any bloody good. And if he could find fault with anybody or anything, he'd find it. Particularly after you'd had a few drinks, after the rum ration. And everybody...
He'd take more, he'd be getting extra rum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He used to talk the young lads into taking theirs, you know. You didn't get it until he was 20, and some were quite young 20s, you know. And nobody liked him. He used to pick on the weaker ones, too. And, of course, the more robust ones, they used to stand up to him and tell him where to go and bloody do with himself. But the younger ones used to pick on them. But what's never mentioned, that when we left Algiers, and we left there, nobody ever saw him again. And nobody ever mentioned him or missed him. No officers or nothing. And that was ever so strange.
Well, had he deserted him or nobody gone overboard? Or?
Nobody seems to know. The theory went round the ship that he accidentally fell over the side when he was Brahms and Liszt. Now, whether he was, I don't know. But nobody seemed to mention him after that. He was never mentioned after that. Now, whether we lost him in there, whether he deserted, I don't know. I think myself, somebody really pushed him over the side. That's my opinion of it, because he was the most hated man on the ship.
But you didn't know that?
We didn't know that. Didn't know that at all.
Now, what about back in port? We haven't talked about Pollock Dock itself, about how you got on there. What was it like when you were back in harbour? What was the routine?
The normal routine when you got back in, depending on what watch, if you was on a watch, if you was going on leave, 14 days leave, or 7 days in some cases, depending on when we were sailing, or if there was a boiler clean coming up, the most exciting thing was them that was going on leave. The other two watches that was left on board, there was the usual duty, paint ship, clean the ship, that was the main thing is. And by God, slinging planks over the side and painting the ship. And Shivas was one who did like a clean ship. So you started from the top and you worked your way down. And you rubbed it and done the old bloody lot of it, the old lot. It's all right, passed the time, passed the day.
And would you be allowed, we'll come back to leave later, but would you be allowed ashore?
Oh, yeah.
What would you do ashore?
Yeah. Mostly drink and go up the pubs, cinema, dance halls. The local dance, there was two, there was a Paradise dance hall, which was the main one, the biggest one. There was a couple of dance halls.
And what was the Paradise dance hall like? Can you tell us what it would be like?
Well, when the ships were in harbour, there was somewhere around about six ships in harbour at the same time. And there's roughly, say, just under 200 men on each ship. Then that's a lot of blokes ashore. This is just the one group, this is. So the Paradise used to be chock-a-block with sailors. Very rare you ever saw a soldier in there. Very rare. Occasionally you might have seen an American in there, but not very often. And it was chock-a-block with sailors and shortage of girls, of course.
Not many girls, then?
Very few. I've got photographs of the Paradise there, and if you notice, there's more girls than there is sailors there in the photograph.
But that's not how it was, really.
No, not really. And Shivas is on this one as well. He was the one for the late long ladies, you know.
So the officers would go there as well?
Oh, yeah.
And what was a night like there? I mean, would it have a bar, a band? What was it like?
There was a bar and a good band. And, of course, in those days it was different to the music today. It was good music. They used to play a lot of Glenn Miller stuff, you know, and some of Henry Hall's music and all that. It was great fun, but at 11 o'clock at night, everything shut off. It was closed down then. It didn't go on till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. 11 o'clock, all finished. But the lads enjoyed it. And of course, they always get very smartly dressed, and the trousers were pressed, and the shoes were polished. All very smartly dressed.
Any fighting trouble with either local lads?
No,
or
there was one particular. No, there weren't that. There weren't. There was no fight or anything like that. But I do remember one case. Of not fighting, but there was a disturbance, more so when you used to take the girls home. You know, the Irish didn't like this at all, particularly. I mean, it was up the Falls Road there. Well, I used to meet one of the girls and take her home occasionally, and they used to, up the Falls Road, and the local Irish, which was young men, you know, because they hadn't been called up, nor they hadn't been called up in the army, around the 18, 17, 18, 19 probably. They used to try and pick a fight with you, tried to trip you up or push you around, you know. Never when you was taking the girl home, it was when you was coming back on your own. You know, you used to get little bits of trouble, a few fisticuffs. Sometimes you used to end up with a torn collar or a thick ear, you know. But there was never fighting amongst ourselves, amongst the sailors.
Would you respond if they tripped you up? You'd get up and clout them one or?
No, just walk on by. You didn't want to get your head punched in by three or four burly Irishmen.
So you ignored it?
Done our best to ignore it.
And what about the pubs? What were the pubs like? Was there any particular pub you went in?
Yes, there was one there, and Jason's, I think it was called, Jason's Bar. The bars were different to our pubs anyway, the little cubicles and that, and girls weren't allowed in them. There was all fellas in there drinking, you know, no girls in there. And, of course, the main drink was porter, you know, Guinness, draft Guinness porter.
Now, were you used to Guinness? I mean, had you had it before?
No, in England, when we were back at home, no, we used to... Being a Midlander, I used to drink a mild beer, never bitter or lager. I never heard of lager in those days. Bitter and mild. I used to drink mild. It seemed to be the only thing that had any taste in it. But over there, I used to drink porter, which is draft Guinness, and that was nice. Even today, I still only drink draft Guinness.
You got the taste for it then?
Oh, yeah, I think it's value for money, and it was in those days. But over in the States, over in the... In Ireland, when he was there, you didn't get so much drink purchased for you like you did in this country. You used to come and leave it in, you used to spend a penny on
drink. Come back to that, yeah.
Yeah, never spend a penny.
But over there, you'd have to buy your own.
You had to buy your own. Occasionally.
What were the bars like? Was there anything to do in them other than drink?
No, other than drink. That's the main thing.
Billiards or no darts?
No darts. No dominoes.
No.
No.
Nothing.
No, you might find a pub with a piano in, but that was rare. I never found one. But they did say there's such and such a pub out, so and so. They got a Joanna in there, you know.
And again, there'd be no trouble?
No, I can't remember any place being wrecked or anything like that.
How did you get on with the crews of the other ships? You know, the Calder, how well did you mix with them?
It's funny, there's a lot of competition between the ships. Everybody used to run the other ships down, saying they was untidy, they were scruffy, the officers was a load of rubbish, you know. And we got the best officers in the fleet, and we got the smartest people in the fleet, you know, and that sort of thing. But occasionally, I mean, say that I'm a new one or two on the Calder. I never used to purposely meet them. I used to meet them ashore, you know, if they was on the same watch. But I can't ever remember the ships being together like that, you know. The two ships, like the Berry or the Buckley, anything like that. I can't remember them getting together like that.
So you weren't that close?
No, I don't think we were. I mean, say, all the photographs I've got of the dance halls, I can pick out every one of the Bentinck men on there, and I think the Bentinck men on there was 90% of them was all Bentinck men in there. And there was probably, 100 sailors in there. I think the biggest part of them was, Bentinck men.